Hey guys, Dr. Ray Heinisch here, and I'd like to welcome you to another episode of the Cut the Fat podcast. In today's episode, we actually started with the intention to talk to you guys about high-protein, low-carb diets. But we ended up talking about a question that I had posted on Facebook and some of your answers. And it actually took us on a pretty wild ride. So instead of doing the high-protein, low-carb diet today, we're going to do that on the next podcast. So for today's podcast, we're going to talk about the barriers to successful weight loss. So go ahead, enjoy the podcast. I hope you get a ton of useful tips out of this that you can apply to your own life. And we'll see you at the next Cut the Fat podcast. All right. Hello, everybody. It's Dr. Ray Heinisch, and I'm joined here with, of course, Blythe Ahlberg. And we are podcasting for you again. Hey, Blythe.
Hey, we are back on board. I love it.
Yes, we are. So in today's podcast, we're going to touch on high protein diets and talk about the Atkins diet and high protein in general. And then we'll finish up with what we believe our golden nuggets are, or our take home messages from the high protein story. Does that sound okay?
Sounds great to me.
Now, before we do that, you know, I'll point out that we have a Facebook page. It's all you got to do is search for Cut the Fat Podcast, all one word. Go in there and like it. You know, what I like to do is post some thoughtful questions, you know, some questions that get people really thinking. And I wanted to touch on one of the questions that I had asked and some of the answers that people had given. So are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right.
Go
so
for
how
it.
About if I ask you the question and you
Oh,
answer.
You're going to hit me with the question. Okay.
Okay. So here it is. All right. I know you know the question already because you're up on Facebook all the time, but let me go ahead and give you the question and you go ahead and give me your answer. All right.
Okay.
It's a mental exercise. And here it goes. There are two people who are barriers to your healthy lifestyle. The first person is you.
Okay.
Who is the second person and why? And here's the caveat. You must answer. You cannot say that I am the only person responsible. It has to be someone like your spouse, your kids, your boss, quote unquote, the man, your lazy dog, your school, society as a whole. I don't care what it is, but it can't be you. We already said there are two people who are responsible or barriers to your healthy lifestyle. One is you and the other is?
Friends? Can I kind of lump all my friends into one individual?
Yeah, so you can, but you have to explain why.
Okay, I will tell you exactly why. Because every single time I get invited somewhere with friends, that particular event is a must for them, and they put that on me. So here's a perfect example. My friend Sarah says, oh my gosh, it's my birthday. You have to come. You've got to come to my birthday dinner. It's going to be so much fun. I've got all these people coming. I got a DJ coming. Come on over. We're dressing up. It's a costume party. You've got to come. And I'm like, okay, the only thing is I'm not drinking. And she's like, what? You're not drinking? And I'm probably going to bring my own food. So I'm just putting it out there that I'm getting ready for something and I'm not going to be eating what is available unless it's like celery sticks or something, you know, something that follows what I'm eating right now. So she said, well, this one time, don't you have a cheat meal coming up? Don't you have, you know, one day a week where you can do something? Well, she's trying now to decide that that is going to be the reason why I go off my program where I usually have my day scheduled for like a Wednesday. And of course, her thing falls on a weekend day.
Yeah, like most.
Like most. So most of my friends go through the weeks. You know, Monday through Friday, they follow the guidelines of eating, you know, fairly healthy. I surround myself with people who eat that way. And the weekends are like time off. But if I want to make progress, I can't allow myself any time off other than my scheduled, you know, I'm going to call them cheat meals.
Yeah.
You know, so every single time, and I swear to God, Ray, there is something every weekend. It doesn't matter if it's a birthday party or, hey, we're too tired to cook dinner. We're all going to have a barbecue and then all they have are hot dogs. Just, it's always something. And each individual is more concerned about you being at their party for them. It's all about them, not me. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes perfect sense.
Okay, now, so they think that I should make the exception for them. That's
right.
That's the biggest imposition.
you know what? Same thing for me. It's my, you know, my girlfriend has a tendency, you know, she does this thing. She says, you know, it's usually the weekend and we just got done going out to eat and have a dinner. And the dinner, mind you, was not all that healthy. I mean, I try to keep it pretty healthy, but you know, there's a little bit of slack on a dinner on a Friday or a Saturday night when we go out. We go out usually once a weekend.
Okay.
And then she does this. She says, you want a McFlurry?
Did she do it like that?
She does it just like that. And it makes me laugh. And it makes, and she knows that because I am embarrassed to say I was the one who introduced her to the McFlurry.
Oh.
This was like 2 years ago.
Sabotage.
And so now she's hooked on them. And after every dinner, she says, you want a McFlurry? For those of you who don't know, I mean, a McFlurry is an ice cream treat at McDonald's, right?
Yeah, they've got like cookie bits mixed in,
yes,
or chocolate,
yes,
chips,
yes,
or M&M's, or whatever.
They're delightful. But so, you know, it, and what happens, and I see this more with women than I do with guys, women have a tendency to want to share the experience of food. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
They like, there's something in the experience of sharing the experience. With guys, we don't care. You know, you do what you want to do. I'll do what I want to do. And we even get annoyed when people say, well, you know, aren't you going to try this? I mean, why not? You know, they get angry because you're not trying the food.
Right.
So yeah, that would be the person that I would vote as my barrier is my girlfriend. But I think
okay.
She knows it. Yeah.
Okay.
So
it's a double-edged sword.
You know, let me tell you why I asked this question though. It's because, you know, I'm all about personal empowerment, right? I honestly do believe that in the end, it's you. It's you, the one. You're the one who's staring yourself in the mirror, and you're the one who has to make the decisions in your life, right?
Yes.
But, you know, people might say, well, you know, you're an optimist. And I'd say, well, that's accurate. I believe myself to be an optimist. But an optimist doesn't look out on a garden full of weeds, close their eyes and clench their fists and say, there are no weeds, there are no weeds, there are no weeds. You know, an optimist looks out on that garden, sees a whole bunch of weeds and says, oh, man. There are a lot of weeds in my garden. And then the optimist will plan out a plan to get rid of the weeds and keep them out. And then they'll get to picking the weeds. You know, that's what an optimist does. A pessimist looks out in the garden of weeds and says, oh, my God, there are too many weeds out there. I'm getting the heck out of here. Right? That's
right.
A pessimist. So what we don't want to do, you know, we definitely want to take responsibility for our own lives. But what we don't want to do is we don't want to imagine or live with the hallucination that we don't have barriers out there that are outside ourselves that are standing in our way, because they're all over the place, aren't they?
Yeah. Some people call them excuses, but I think if it's the same thing that keeps getting in the way, it's be an optimist, make a plan to move through that.
Oh, true. And, you know, one of the first people to answer was Diane on Facebook. This was a question that's posted on Facebook. And she wrote, I get up at 5 p.m. Well, first she said, my job. And, you know, guys, when we're digging into our life, we don't want to look on the superficial layers. We want to go deep if we're going to get to really what's important, right? So she wrote, I wrote, don't forget to explain why. So she wrote, I get up at 5 a.m., drive 40 minutes, start at 7, work till 4:30, but manage 3 time zones, so I am on 24/7. I've started trying to use resistance bands if I have a meeting, free lunch, walk to speak to people, but I'm overall spent at the end of the day. Diet is good, just little time and fast-paced, high stress. You've heard it all before. So, you know, you've got a lot of really good tidbits in there about your lifestyle, about multiple barriers that are standing in your way, right?
Yeah, but you know what? Instead of hearing all of the things that stand in her way, I actually started writing it down. I'm like, okay, 5 a.m., she has to be at work. She's got a 40-minute drive. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking that, I know for most people, it's not optimal to eat a healthy breakfast or make sure you get the right type of foods in during those 40 minutes that you're driving. But it's definitely something that's doable. I mean, if you're going to start, you know, if her first plan, I know she says her diet's fairly good, but is she skipping breakfast or is she getting a good breakfast in at that time? That would be a place to start. She's got some time there is what I'm saying. There's 40 minutes. Now, you probably can't exercise while you're driving, although I've found ways.
I believe it.
Believe it or not, you can flex a quad or a glute while you're driving.
I believe you do that too. But you're right. You know, when people say diet is good and they don't get into detail about what good is, I start to question a bit and say, is there a lot of room for improvement? It's like your friends who eat well 5 days a week, but splurge two.
You know, they never make any headway.
2 out of 7 is not a good record. You know, that's not a good record.
Right.
So as far as weight loss is concerned, that's a failing grade.
Yes.
90% minimum. 95% is almost, you know, a certainty. If you've got a good program and you follow it 95% of the time, that's almost a certainty that you're
right. And two whole days. Yep. 2 whole days makes you at what? 70%? 65?
You're the math whiz. It's a failing grade, whatever it is.
Okay. Yeah. I know. So, I'm not the math whiz. Where did you get that right?
So, you know, you're right. She's got some opportunity there. It could be that she has to make a smoothie in the morning. And maybe she goes for a 15-20 minute walk in place of making breakfast, and instead has a really good solid smoothie in the morning and takes that in the car on the way to work.
Yeah,
maybe
there are always changes that can be made to help streamline everything. If what you're doing currently isn't working, change it.
Absolutely. And then once you do change it, stick to it for long enough to gauge whether or not it's going to be a benefit to you.
Yes.
Another one was Dave. You know Dave. He's actually in the weight loss group. He wrote, "I would blame some embodiment of advertising as a whole. I know that I can be completely happy and satisfied, then see an advertisement for something tasty and unhealthy on TV and billboards, wherever, and feel like I'm craving it hugely. It wouldn't have crossed my mind to eat a cheeseburger if I hadn't seen one at the time. What's ridiculous is it doesn't even require a picture of the food. It could just be seeing the golden arches somewhere, and I'm craving it. I understand the companies need to make money, but it's at my health expense. I guess I could quit watching TV, but I can't quit driving past places. I need to figure out how not to see them as I pass by." That's a great one, because I think we all fall into that trap. And it is a trap. It's a trap that's made by some very, very intelligent and well-researched marketers.
Yeah.
I mean, their whole purpose is to get us to crave their food. Their whole purpose is to get us to buy their food. And then once we get it, there have been a whole gaggle of scientists, what's called food scientists, whose only job was to make that food so tasty, what we call hyper-palatable, that you can't stop eating them. And then you crave them when you walk into the supermarket. That's their goal. So
you
it's
know,
true. It's a true barrier.
Yeah, I find that often, you know, it's usually the television and myself. I don't notice stuff when I'm driving past very often. But, you know, something I learned recently that kind of goes in line with that is apparently Burger King. I have a friend who works for McCormick, the seasoning. Mm-hmm. Apparently Burger King has these little drops that they put in their steam vents that come out lunchtime and dinner. They actually put that smell in the air to attract people to the restaurant. Wow. I know there's a Burger King not too far from your office, right? Do you smell that twice a day?
It's not that close, but I would believe that. That sounds to be like an accurate thing. You know, with Starbucks, the Starbucks employees are not permitted to wear perfume because it interferes with the connection with the coffee smell.
Wow. Isn't that interesting? They've definitely got it worked out to a science.
It is a science. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. Well, one answer, or not answer, but a suggestion I have for Dave would be, what about maybe at nighttime, if you're laying in bed, if you know you've had dinner, you're done for the night, and you're the type of person that likes to go back into the cupboard after you've already had dinner, try watching movies or like DVDs or something that's pre-recorded at night. So A, you can either fast forward through the commercials, or B, there aren't any commercials because you're watching a DVD, if that helps you.
Good point. You know, TiVo and DVRs are an amazing invention, not only because they allow you to fast food through the commercials that are designed to get you to want to order a pizza right then and there, but it also saves you time. A TV show that's 60 minutes can be brought down to 40 minutes, and guess what? You get 20 minutes there. Blythe, let me give you and this is another big problem, because in the U.S., I know, average person watches TV between 4 and 6 hours a day.
Okay.
I imagine it's the same for a lot of our European listeners and our Aussie listeners, that it's probably about the same, that you see a lot of people that are at least getting closer to that 4-hour mark watching TV. If we were to take one of those hours. Now, one of the first complaints we get from people who we work with is they don't have enough time to be healthy, right? They
yes.
don't have
enough time. Oh, time is always the number
they
one.
They don't have right. enough time to work out. If you took one of those 4 hours, and four being the kind of the minimum that the average American watches, if you took one of those hours per day, guess how much time that is in a year?
It's 365 hours.
It's 2 weeks.
Oh, wow. Okay.
2 weeks of time you get back. 2 weeks of life you get back by stopping 1 hour of television watching.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
2 weeks. 365 hours divided by 24 actually equals 15 days. So it's a little bit over 2 weeks.
Crazy, wow.
Right? So a whole month of time you get back by not watching 2 hours of TV at night.
Wow. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
You are a math whiz. Just saying.
I did the math previously.
You know what? That's awesome. What a great suggestion. What a great tool to give somebody whose biggest dilemma is not having enough time. What is the second biggest reason you hear why people don't, you know, implement exercise or maybe food preparation into their life? What's the second one you get?
I would say it is, well, that's a good question. First, hands down, is definitely the time.
Okay.
Second would be, I guess they would say food cravings or no, second would be they don't know what to eat. That's the next thing that I think people say.
Mine was going to be energy. If you would have asked me that question, I would have said, by the time the day is over, I am just spent. But wait. The woman who replied first on the question that you put on Facebook.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
She wrote that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Diane.
She said, well, what time did she get off work? 4:30?
4:30, but she was up at 5, so she's already been up for 12 hours.
Okay.
And she says that she manages 3 time zones. I'm not sure what that means, but she says she's at it 24/7, meaning she never gets a break.
Okay.
And I'll tell you this. Most people wake up in the morning and they have a bucket of energy. And then from that point forward, there is a ladle of energy is being taken out every time you have an interaction with somebody or you have to do something. It takes a little bit of your energy out. A lot of the problem is people wake up without energy. And there's one primary reason why that happens, Blythe. And that is tension is a subconscious process.
Okay.
Relaxation is a conscious process. So people go to sleep tense and they spend the entire night tense and they wake up not feeling rested because they didn't relax. So one of the things that people have to do to get a jolt of energy in the morning is to consciously relax at night before bed.
You know, that's something I used to practice all the time. And I think I got to the point where I just do it all the time. I used to watch, you're going to totally crack up at this, but this is a suggestion for people out there who find themselves really tense when they go to sleep. Back in like 1989 or 1990, I didn't have any other way to exercise than my mom's old VCR tapes, okay? She had bought this Jane Fonda videotape that she never used. And at the very end of this tape, it was my favorite part. I would never tell any of my friends. I was like a ninth grader. Never tell any of my friends that I was doing this. But she has you lay on a mat and you squeeze one muscle group at a time. So you'd be laying there, you would squeeze your feet. And then think about sand just draining out of your feet and completely relax that muscle and work your way all the way up your body. Then you do your calves. Squeeze your calves like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Take a deep breath and just pretend like it's sand draining out of your calves. And then do your quads and then do your glutes and then do your lower back. And as you move up your body, you would be so completely relaxed. By the end of this, I would fall asleep.
Hmm.
It was the craziest thing.
I love it.
Yeah, it worked for me. And, you know, I was really, really young, but I'm probably one of the only people I know that as soon as my head hits the pillow, and it's not because I'm exhausted, it's because I can instantly relieve tension when I say so.
Awesome. And you know what? What that did was that was a conscious process, right? You had you were thinking about tensing your feet and relaxing.
That's
what the primary thing I want people to get is you don't just – a lot of people just expect relaxation to happen once you get home. But with Diane, for example, she's saying, I manage 3 time zones. and I'm on 24/7. So she's never consciously having a moment of relaxation. And because of that, she's going to be wiped. I'll point out one more thing before we kind of move on in the discussion, and that is that the body has a natural wave to the way it works. It's got a rhythm to it. You know, we've got circadian rhythms, which is the night and day rhythm, meaning we want to be asleep at night and we want to be awake during the day. And when we stick to that rhythm, we have a tendency to be a lot more healthy than if we were to do shift work, for example, and not live by that circadian rhythm.
Right.
But there's another rhythm that happens within the day, and that is about a 90 to 120 minute period. And I think I've talked about this in the past, but it's a 90 to 120 minute period of focus that we have. And then the body has a natural dip in energy that occurs. And when that happens, you have to listen to that dip in energy. You can't try to push through it, because if you do, you end up getting into what we call a stressed sick syndrome, where your body becomes sick because it's not getting that it's not allowed to relax during that dip in energy. And that dip usually only lasts but 20 or 30 minutes. So if you
And what time of day is this normally for someone who's on the regular?
It's every 90 to 120 minutes. So what you want to do is you want to pay attention to how you're feeling while you're working. For example, if you're reading an article while you're at work, or you're reading a report, and you start to notice yourself reading the same line over and over again, that's a good indication that you've dipped into that period where your body wants to rejuvenate itself. You have to listen to that. If you don't listen to that and you push through it, you're going to miss the opportunity to repair and regenerate yourself so that you'll have a more balanced energy.
Okay, so how would you suggest then going about that? How would you, if you're reading a report and you're at work, how would you suggest rejuvenating yourself at that time?
Great question. Well, first you have to be able to catch the fact that you're in that you're entering into a rejuvenation stage, okay? So again, it happens about every 90 to 120 minutes. And if you were to set a clock for, let's say, an hour and a half, that would be a 90-minute period. That would be the ideal situation. So you set a clock for an hour and a half. You focus and you work hard on one thing. Don't try to multitask. Just get the most important thing out of the way for the day. And then at that 90-minute period, you start to pay attention to things. You start to notice if you have to go to the bathroom, if you're feeling a little bit of grumbling in the stomach, if you're losing your focus, if you're noticing that you're having a tendency to check email more often or tidy up the office. Those are all indications that your mind is kind of taking a dip in energy, and it's telling you to take the break. If you do take the break, you will be rewarded with more focus and more energy for the next 90 to 120 minutes, you see? And so you'll be much more effective during that time. If you resist that relaxation moment, then your effectiveness and your efficiency goes down. So you think you're doing more by pushing through it, but you end up doing less.
That's the whole, like, Rocky mentality.
Yes, yes, exactly. Okay. And what ends up happening is if you pay attention to that rhythm and you listen to it and you relax when your body wants you to relax, then at the end of the day, you're not as wiped.
Gotcha. Okay. Hey, you know, something I thought of right when we moved off of the waking up, not feeling rested, you know, something I found for me, and I think that most people who have ever dieted like a bodybuilder or got ready for a bodybuilding show is I feel completely rested when I wake up if I have a dinner the night before, very low carbohydrates. I'm not talking vegetable carbohydrates, but if I start leaving out the potatoes or the rice or the bread at dinner time, I find that I wake up more refreshed the next day. If I have a bowl of ice cream or something right before I go to bed, I wake up the next day feeling groggy. Now, if you're somebody who does that all the time, you might not realize that you wake up in that kind of a like a carb cloud, like with a carb hangover. That's what I call it. But if you start getting rid of the carbs late at night, and we're going to be talking about carbs in just a minute and like high protein diets and things like that, you start leaving that out, you'll start to recognize what it feels like to wake up more refreshed until you go and eat a bowl of ice cream again before you go to bed and you remind yourself, oh my gosh, that's what I used to feel like every day.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, I think I talked about this in the past. When I had gotten or purchased a alarm clock that keeps track of my brain waves,
Yeah.
Did we talk about this before?
We sure did. And I thought, I was like, I have got to borrow that. Oh,
it's
my.
It's called
we are nerds.
I know. No joke. It's called a Zio. It's an alarm clock that monitors your brain waves while you're sleeping. And the whole purpose of it was to, number one, see how good of a quality of sleep you get during the week and be able to alter your lifestyle or your evening rituals in such a way to promote a better quality sleep. Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I wanted to do is I like to test some things out. So I started testing out different meals as my last meal of the day. And I tested out a very high carb, high refined carb meal. I don't remember what it was, pizza or I don't remember what it was, pizza or ice cream or something. But it's a very high carb meal. And then I went, and all in the interest of science, by the way, Blythe.
Oh, okay. Sure.
And so I went to sleep. Woke up the next morning, and I had already had some records from previous nights where I did not eat that kind of meal before bed. And what I noticed was there was a significant decrease in the quantity of what we call deep sleep. Like, the brain waves tell us what type of sleep. REM sleep, which is the wakeful sleep that we have. That's when we're dreaming. Deep sleep is the restorative sleep. That's when your body's kicking out hormones and repairing and regenerating the tissues. Okay. And then you've got light sleep, and we're not exactly sure what that does. So there are various stages of sleep, but the most important as it pertains to repair and rejuvenation of the body is the deep sleep. And the high-carb meals inhibited my deep sleep. I had far less deep sleep that night than I had on previous. And I was able to repeat this on a number of different meals with a number of different high-carb dinners. Again, all in the interest of science.
I thought you were going to say, well, I had ice cream like 7 days in a row and it happened every single night. So, yeah, I conclude that.
So that's
interesting, though.
Yeah. So it's true. And it's all about it's not about managing time, folks. Everybody gets the same amount of time. It's about managing your energy levels. Isn't that important? It's managing your energy levels. If you don't manage your energy levels, then everybody at 4:30, by the way, there is a natural dip around 4 to 4:30 that happens in our energy levels.
And I was searching for that.
Yes, and that is true. That is accurate. It's part of the rhythms. Again, it's a different type of rhythm, similar to the 90 and 120-minute rhythm, but there's one that happens naturally around 4, 4:30. And so that's when our willpower begins to decrease. And mm-hmm. when that happens, we start to crave more fruits and vegetables. I mean, I wish it were fruits and vegetables. More carbohydrates like bread, pasta, rice, sweets, mm-hmm. and so forth. And there's one other thing that causes us to crave sweets, and that's a lack of sleep. Again, another issue with Diane may be that she was lacking in sleep, and because of that, again, you start to crave sweet things.
Yeah, actually, we found that before. I think having discussions with people who work like night shifts, they have a much harder time, just because they're not resting as well. You know, they're trying to sleep during the day and things are going on outside and maybe their room's not dark enough or whatever. They're not getting restful sleep. And then they find that they kind of just eat whatever just because, you know, they're not rested. They don't feel like eating the healthy foods, I guess, or they feel more like eating the unhealthy foods. That's probably a better way to put it.
Yeah. And that's sleep deprivation will do that. It's a scientific fact. There's no doubt about that.
So sleep is important.
Yeah. And that'll be a whole podcast. We'll have to dedicate a whole podcast to sleep, how to improve it, what its impact is on fat loss and so forth. But just know for now that it does have a negative impact on weight. Even in animals, when we deprive animals of sleep, they have a tendency to get fat. They have a tendency to gain weight. So that's that one. You know what, Blythe? Why don't we do this? Because we're already almost 30 minutes into this podcast. So why don't we just finish up with this discussion and then we'll get into the protein, the high protein diets in the next podcast.
Okay.
Okay.
Sure.
So a couple other notes that people had made, and that is one woman, you might be able to touch on this because I don't have any kids, but she said, my kids. My daughter will only eat junk, and my son has food allergies, so I have to cook all the time. We eat healthy, but he's a growing boy and wants foods that I shouldn't eat. He reacts to most vegetables and fruits depending on the time of the year, so I don't end up using as many fresh veggies as I would like.
Okay. Well,
Oh, and by the way, she said, and I'm a busy single mother with two jobs. I get sick of trying to fix three different meals a night.
Okay. So my first question is, what type of meals is she cooking? I mean, is she making healthy food that everybody in the family is going to eat? Because I'm going to totally generalize, but I think that most people with children, the mom or the parents usually eat one way and the kids eat another way. Now, I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but I know at my house, nobody ever feels like eating the same thing at the same time. But I try to make something that everybody will eat that is healthy, and then we can kind of expand from there. So it's always kind of a, not a potluck, but kind of like a buffet. We always have a lot of leftovers hanging around, so I try to make a little bit of everything. But as far as, I guess, you got to find the foods that are going to work in your household. But just because that's, you know, those are the things that your son is limited to, does not mean you cannot add something additional to that for you. If you're cooking, you're already cooking. So does it matter, you know, if he can't eat green beans and you want green beans and he can only have corn and mushrooms, you know, can you cook some green beans in a different pan while you're cooking the other food? I guess that's what I'm getting at.
Right. You know, with food allergies are they're a pain. They are mm-hmm. a pain to deal with, especially when you're talking about dairy and gluten food sensitivities, because mm-hmm. everything has dairy and gluten. So I definitely understand with her issue. And when you start getting into fruits and vegetables, it does get complicated because mm-hmm. then those are foods that again, you are going to have difficulty because you may not be able to prepare them for the whole family. Mm-hmm. But I'll point out that you don't necessarily have to. I mean, obviously, you can make up fruits and vegetables and you don't have to cook them. They don't have to be cooked. You can just have right. a humongous salad. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, they don't have to eat it, but you can eat it.
Right.
It sounds as though she's run into the same problem that I think a lot of mothers and families do. And that is their kids want junk food. And so they give them junk food. And when they give them junk food, they want the junk food themselves.
Yes.
How do you handle it?
This is hard for me because I have two young ones. You know, I've got he's now 3 and a 6-year-old, and they're both extremely picky eaters. Now, I also have a 15-year-old who didn't have a choice of being a picky eater because my will of having her eat healthier foods, my 15-year-old, as she was growing up, was much stronger with one child. Now adding two more to the mix, relatively close in age, trying to force two younger children to eat everything I eat, my resolve is a little bit weaker than it used to be. So we do have chicken nuggets, fish sticks, you know, things like that in the house that I enjoy, but there are also things that I could probably find something that I would like better. And then willpower has to come into it too. You know, do you really want that fish stick really bad, or you just want it just because your kids are eating it and it's simpler? You know, you could probably slice up, I don't know, I'm trying to think. Every once in a while, I'll grab some shrimp out of the freezer and I'll just stick them on the pan with the fish sticks.
Okay, so let's stop for a second.
Okay.
And let's move from the focused or the specifics into some principles that okay. she could potentially use. Because okay. We don't know what food allergies the kid has
right.
and what she's working with. So
it's yeah. I'm getting into the tough love phase. I'm having a hard time staying away from that.
You got to understand, man, she has two jobs and she's got some kids with some pretty specific issues. You know, food sensitivities, I don't think you have kids that have any serious food allergies or food sensitivities, but it's a real pain to work around those.
I'm sure.
So the principles are this. Number one, it's going to be about planning. When you cook food, you should not be cooking for one meal, right?
Oh, no. Right. Exactly right. Just I was talking about at the beginning how we always have a bunch of leftovers. That's because I always make more, especially of the healthy foods. So it's sitting there prepared, ready to just pick up and go, because we have a pretty busy lifestyle too.
Right. I make a huge vat of chili, for example. I use a very low fat beef I get from Trader Joe's, a prepackaged spices for chili, mm-hmm. and a can of beans. You put it together, you put it in a pot, and it cooks, and that's it. Once it's cooked, I put it into smaller containers and I freeze it. So I just reach in there, grab a container, and it's go. I've got at least 6 meals from that one pot. So it doesn't take any more time to cook 3 pots worth of stuff than it does to cook one.
Exactly. And I'm always preaching food preparation. Be prepared for the busiest times of your life. When you've got extra time, you know, make a little extra.
Oh, make a lot extra if you can, especially when you got kids. Mm-hmm. But the point is, if you're busy, then you've got to leverage the time that you do have. So make 3 pots worth of food, put them into small containers and freeze them so that when mealtime comes around, you grab it out of the freezer, put it in the microwave, heat it up on the stove, whatever, and you go, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah. Especially if, you know, with the food allergies and things like that, you may make him a bunch of food. So, you know, he's got that separate. So it's ready to go. And maybe, you know, if he's severely allergic to some foods, maybe there's something that you enjoy eating that's on the healthy side that you can't prepare with his food. So his is already done. You can focus on cooking something else for yourself. I do understand how time-consuming cooking properly for your family is, or cooking healthy foods. And it is extremely important. But like Ray said, it doesn't take any extra time to make larger amounts of the same healthy foods.
Right. And number two, every meal does not have to be a gourmet meal.
Right.
It could be something very simple. You know, I'll go out to Trader Joe's and grab a packet of organic, free-range beef hot dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And a can of organic baked beans. And when I come home from work, I may have a quick salad, which is usually just lettuce, carrots, some craisins, some nuts, and some balsamic vinaigrette dressing. Mm-hmm. And I'll make 2 of those organic free-range hot dogs and baked beans. And that's okay. My meal. It's not gourmet by any means. Franks and beans. That's all it is. And a salad. And because of that, I have time, and I'm not stressed out when I get home.
But it's also knowing the foods to choose, right? I mean, you're picking foods that are great for a healthy lifestyle that come pre-prepared for the most part, besides, you know, adding the little things to the salad. Most people can keep a pre-mixed thing of lettuce, you know, in the fridge. Very, very simple. Low preparation time. If you've got more time on the weekends, you can always, you know, make a big vat of chili or I like to do like a low fat, I use chicken breast, and I'll make, get some organic chicken stock and just throw a bunch of vegetables in there and make that chicken soup for the week. Everybody in the family will eat that. Something you can stick in the freezer or the fridge. Same thing. Very low cost, B, very low preparation time, and C, it's going to last you the whole week, and it's a healthy meal.
Absolutely. And you can find books on Amazon. For example, I've got a couple here on my shelf. I've got Fix It, Freeze It, Feast. Or Fix, Freeze, Feast is one book. And The Meals for a Month is another book. And there are a whole host of other ones available as well.
You know what? You could go on Facebook and type in recipe, I believe recipe. There's a woman that I've got on our Facebook page. I think it's Recipes for Gals or something like that. She puts up new recipes every day, and they're all high protein. They're all great organic type recipes. I mean, anything from quiche to baked oatmeal bars that you could make for on-the-go breakfast bars. She did like a orange tilapia the other day. She's got all sorts of great stuff on there. The stuff you're looking for is all available. And that's what's great about the internet is you can just go on there and find recipes, but you've got to put in the little bit of time. You know, the internet makes it very, very easy and very little time for us, but you still have to take the initiative to go on there and find what's going to work for you.
Right. And if it's time again, remember, if I have my choice between 1 hour of working out or 1 hour of food prep, I'll take the food prep every time.
That's exactly right.
So here are the principles, and then we're going to move on. Principle number one is make big batches. It doesn't take you any more time to cook a big batch of stuff than it does to cook a small batch of stuff.
Right.
Number two, buy foods that are pre-prepared. For example, the organic hot dogs, they don't have any preservatives, any nitrates or anything like that, with organic baked beans, very simple, very quick, that kind of thing. Think in terms of that. And number three, look for lateral shifts. I don't believe, you ever heard that phrase, you know, I've never seen a dead cat in a tree, something like that, or speaking to the fact that there's this idea that we need to somehow save or call the fire department if a cat gets caught up in a tree. Truth is, if a cat gets hungry and wants down bad enough, it'll get down. It's going to find a way.
Same sure. thing
with a child. A child's not going to starve themselves.
Right.
When they're hungry, they're going to eat. So this idea that we need to have crappy food available to them is not true. And I know I don't have any kids. I'm a bit of a poser by saying this, but it is a truth of the matter. There has to be ways that we can get our kids to eat healthier. And what I might recommend is this, and this is the third principle. Third principle is look for lateral shifts in eating. For example, we don't have to go from feeding them bread to not feeding them any bread. We look for a lateral shift, which means we may go from feeding them white bread to these lower calorie, low carb bread slices, or what are those little thins? Those like wheat thin kind
of? Oh, the little sandwich thins. Uh-huh.
Little sandwich thins, things like that. So you have an improvement there. It's more fiber, lower carbohydrate, lower calorie, and it's an improvement over what they are currently getting.
Yeah. And, you know, also take this as an opportunity to educate your kids. Even though you think they're not interested, you can teach them, you know, what you're doing and why you're doing it. You'll also notice behavioral changes. I find that the better the breakfast, the better my children, you know, survive throughout the day. They get less cranky when it's nap time. You know, all sorts of stuff. Even my 15-year-old, you know, if she gets a good breakfast, and we always talk about breakfast being the most important meal of the day, get a nice healthy breakfast in your kids and they'll actually feel like eating healthier foods. It works for all of us, not just the adults who are conscious of what's going on.
Right. It's true. Mm-hmm. It's true. And, you know, we're seeing more and more research coming out about kids with ADD, ADHD, that there is a definite food component to it. And so we've got to get the artificial colors and flavors out of the picture so that they will be able to function better in school rather than have to medicate them.
Yeah. Right. They're not going to starve to death.
No.
Bottom line is probably none of us are going to starve to death, not with the plethora of food.
Right. But look for lateral shifts. Look for shifts where you can improve upon the quality of their food that you're getting. So if you've been feeding them hot dogs, switch them to the organic, no nitrate containing hot dogs that are lower in fat and higher in protein. So that kind of thing, organic, you know, to make these lateral shifts that are healthier than what they've been getting and won't necessarily have them feeling deprived.
Mm-hmm.
Good enough?
Yeah, great.
Okay. Let's go to Georgie. Georgie is from Australia, and she writes, "My husband, he says he supports me, but he says he always needs a substantial meal when he gets home from his long and stressful day. Salad isn't enough for him, he says. I'm trying to get him to cut carbs from dinner because I'm not eating them." There's more here. "I'm not eating refined carbs at the moment, but he says he doesn't think he can. I'm going to try and get him to do it anyway. I'm so weak normally, but since we've been together, it's been a downhill course of getting fatter. I wish he'd just be happy and not be resentful to eat the foods I make myself and him. Okay, I said it. And now I feel pathetic and like I'm using my husband as an excuse." Ooh, okay, so that's a normal reaction. And I'm glad, Georgie, that you feel a little bit of guilt about saying that. Because the truth is, we should feel a little bit of guilt about that. It tells us that we are the people who take control of our own lives, and we don't like to blame other people. And that's great. And I'm glad you said it. I'm glad you said that you know your husband is a barrier to you, because the truth is, he is. And it's not because you're weak. It's not. Because the human animal is weak. We are weak around food by design. We're hardwired to be weak around food. It's part of who we are.
Right. And all of the outside stimulus doesn't help. You know, as time goes on and, you know, Burger King keeps putting drops in their steam vents, things like that, weakens our resolve. So she's definitely got a good point there. And I don't think she is alone by any means. Mm-mm. On having a spouse that makes this a more difficult challenge.
We all have that person in our life, don't we? It may not be the spouse, but it's somebody.
Yes. Yeah, we've all got somebody.
There was so what's... Oh, go ahead, Blythe.
Okay, for a suggestion for Georgie, I find, and Ray, you can bite my head off if you want after I say this, but I find that guys have, when it comes to weight loss, let me preface it with that. Guys have less of a challenge with carbohydrates to a certain degree than women when it comes to losing weight. So what I'm saying is, I notice that guys can get away with more. What do you think?
I'd say that that's probably accurate in general. Okay. Now, there are exceptions to the rule, but I'd say in general, that's probably the case. Men typically lose weight easier than women do, and men put on weight harder than women do. Mm-hmm. And that's nature's way of making sure that a mother has enough energy stored for both her and a child. Okay. So there's a definite reason for that, and that is accurate. So continue.
Okay, so maybe here's where I'm going with this. Georgie, maybe you can prepare a salad for yourself and maybe a salad and something else for your husband. So preparing the same meal for the both of you, but adding something additional to his, maybe a couple of baby red potatoes on the side, or, you know, if he doesn't only want a salad, try to spruce it up a bit, maybe give him a little sandwich on the side or something. I don't think a little bit of carbohydrates at nighttime for him, if he feels that that's what he needs, if he does have a stressful or maybe physically laboring job where he can use those carbohydrates. But you can still stick to your plan, just add a little extra for him. Or maybe, you know, if that doesn't work for you, if you can't prepare that food for him without you becoming weak and needing some of that on your own, maybe make something, you know, take some time on a Sunday, make some extra carby type food for him, and he's going to have to get that part himself. He can eat what you prepared for him as well as whatever, you know, you prepared like on Sunday or something, or maybe you guys can make something together and have it sitting in the freezer or refrigerator. That way he can get something that's more substantial or more pleasing for him. What do you think? Is that a good suggestion, Ray?
Absolutely. That's a great suggestion.
I know that would work for me, but I don't know that that would work for everybody.
So there are a couple things that I would say to add to that. That there are many options here. I mean, she's certainly what I'm seeing, though, is it seems as though she feels a little bit trapped by the circumstance. And Georgie, you don't have to feel trapped by the circumstance because you have a lot of different options here.
I'm guessing that there's probably a little bit of pressure from that, too, that, you know, when maybe not full on support. So if they're sitting there eating dinner and he's like, is that really all you're going to eat? Is just a salad? Is that all you made for us? You know, you can have something more than that. There might be some pressure in there saying, well, you know, why cut it all out? Can't we do this together? So I'm thinking it might not be comfortable for her not eating the refined carbohydrates because she's getting some pressure from her husband. I'm just guessing. I'm reading into her comment maybe more than she's letting on. But
yeah, I would probably say there's probably a little of that. And there is a natural tendency. Again, human beings are not wired to push away food. So if it's present, if it's there, you will eat it. You remember that rule?
Yes.
Back in the day. So
yes.
It's true that if there's food present, you will want to eat it. And oftentimes, especially if you're dieting, you will have such a strong pull towards that food that you won't be able to resist yourself. I truly believe that. At least not for the long term. When you're living with somebody and it's a day-by-day situation, there will come a time when you will give into it.
Well, and tagged on to the end of that is especially since you've, you know, been right by each other doing the same thing up to this point in time. So you've done everything as partners up until now. Now, you know, she's kind of veering off in her own direction.
So, okay, so here are a few things that I'll add to it.
Okay.
Number one, there's this strange dynamic between men and women, and that is a woman goes into a relationship expecting the man to change, and he never does. A man goes into the relationship expecting the woman to change, expecting the woman never to change, and she always does. So there's a little of that going on here, that Georgie is expecting her husband to kind of meet her in her world.
Mm-hmm.
And we all do this to some extent. We all do this to some extent. So one thing you've got to do is you've got to be able to separate your two worlds on occasion. And it sounds like that could be around mealtime.
Mm.
Okay. There was this point when I was living with my brother and I was putting on some weight because he would bring tons of food home. I would eat it. And we were putting on weight. And
it was like cakes and cookies, wasn't it?
I'm sure there were cakes and cookies in there, pizza on a regular basis. There was, okay. This was a few years back. And there was this point, this time when I crossed the line and I was like, you know what? Enough's enough. You know, I'm a health and wellness professional. I help people get healthy. And this is before I really took to weight loss as my primary purpose in life, weight loss and metabolic syndrome and health from that perspective. Mm-hmm. And there was this point where I said, I was walking around. I would walk around at night around my parking lot because it was pretty dark and wasn't safe to go, you know, running around the area. So I'd walk around my parking lot in circles. And there's this one point where I was like, enough's enough. I'm going to change. And I wanted more than anything for him to come with me. So I walked in. I walked into the house and I said, Jay, I said, turn the TV off. And I turned the TV off and I said, look, I said, now's the time that we need to make a change. We need to make a shift. You know, we're both not looking that healthy. We're both putting on weight. And I, you know, let's do this. This time I'm certain about it. This time I know I'm going to make it happen. And there's nothing that's going to stand in my way. And I remember him looking at me and said, no, nothing's really different. I said, look, this is the last chance I'm going to ask you. I want you to come along. I want to do this with you. But this is the last time I'm asking you. And mm-hmm. he refused it.
Wow.
And so I turned around, walked right back outside, and continued my walk. And at that moment, although I wanted more than anything for him to come with me, because mm-hmm. obviously we don't want our siblings, our friends, our family to get sick. And he's younger than I am, and he's on a blood pressure medication.
Yeah.
And I wanted him to come with me. But at that point, I knew that I had to separate our worlds if I was going to make any progress myself. Mm-hmm. With the hopes, now here's the hope, that when we make that shift, when we make that change, and I did, and I never went back, that they will be drawn to you. They will be drawn to what you have, but you have to embody that first.
Mm.
You can't say, look, I'm going to be healthy. I'm going to be energetic. I'm going to look great. I'm going to feel great. And you can too if you do what I do, because they don't believe it. So you've got to embody it first mm-hmm. and then draw them to you.
Okay. So lead by example, basically.
Lead by example, but be okay with them not coming with you.
Okay.
That goes for friends, family, and whatever, and spouses. Number two, there are six stages to change. Okay, six stages. And this is the problem with group weight loss groups. You know, we see this in the weight loss group. There are six stages. The first stage is called pre-contemplation. Pre-contemplation is where you don't really think you need to change right now. You're not really thinking about change. You're not thinking about losing weight. You just don't think that there's any need to.
Okay.
And then contemplation hits. And contemplation is where you start to say, well, maybe there's a problem here. Maybe you have a high cholesterol. Maybe you have you start to step on the scale. You start to see that number go up. You start to recognize that maybe there's a problem here. So you start to think about changing, but you don't change yet. And then there's the third stage, which is preparation. Preparation is where you begin to say, okay, what do I need to do to make this happen? I need to get a gym membership. I need to maybe meet with a personal trainer, visit my doctor, get cleared, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the action phase. The action phase is where you're in it and you're doing it. And then there's the maintenance phase. The maintenance phase is where you're looking just to maintain your result. You don't need to change anymore because you've achieved what you wanted to achieve. And then finally, you've got the termination phase. And the termination phase is your lifelong phase. That's where you say, okay, it's part of who I am now. So I don't need to consciously be active in that. So a lot of people who are actively listening to our podcast and part of our Facebook community, they're in the action phase right now. Some of them are in the preparation phase, but for the most part, they're in the action phase. Their spouse may be in the contemplation phase or the pre-contemplation phase. Know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's nothing wrong with that. It's just that they're in a different stage right now. And they can't just jump from pre-contemplation to the action phase because that results in failure. You've got to move them from the pre-contemplation stage where they're not thinking that there's a problem to the contemplation phase where they're thinking there's a problem to the preparation phase to the action phase. That's the way it's got to go. You can't force it.
Yeah, and if you're going to bring somebody along with you on this venture or invite somebody along with you, you've got to be, like you said, you've got to be okay with them not being exactly on the same page as you or on the same time as you. But know that you've put the invitation out there because you care about that person. You want them to be healthy with you. And if you set the example, they're more than likely to come along with you, but you can't want it for them. They have to want it for themselves.
Oh, well said. You put all that into one sentence, Blythe.
Oh.
That's very well done.
Thanks. So,
all right, so let's go one more, and then we'll call it a day. And what we'll end up doing is we will do the next podcast about high protein, because this conversation just took on a life of its own. I think people.
I know. I love doing the Facebook review stuff, though.
Yeah, it's good stuff. So here's one that's pretty interesting, a very interesting answer, okay? And again, the question is, just to refresh your memory, there are two people who are barriers to your healthy lifestyle. The first person is you. Who is the second person and why? And you must answer. You cannot say that I am the only person responsible. Is it your spouse, your kids, your boss, et cetera? Okay? That's the question. And this was the answer. This is by Gina Gutierrez Miller. She writes, actually, I would say my triathlon training. This sounds like it doesn't make sense, but the fact that I keep to a pretty heavy training schedule too often provides me with a convenient excuse for refueling in a not so healthy way. It's pretty easy to say yes to a muffin when I've just finished biking for 3 hours, but I am working on changing those bad habits. So this is a really interesting one.
Yeah. You know, what I'm finding, owning a gym, we've got all different types of athletes here. I'm most familiar with the whole bodybuilding aspect of things, which is usually a fairly high protein diet, not too concerned with carbohydrates other than like fruits and vegetables and just what is necessary. But I find that the runners, I've actually got one of my close friends now down here is a marathon runner. She's trying to get me to do a 10K coming up. I don't know. It's something totally different for me. So I am learning a lot about that world, and not by any means is that even close to being a triathlete, but I do know that their main focus is getting in enough carbohydrates. So they've always got carbohydrates on the mind. I've got to refuel. And you combine that being focused on carbohydrates and always thinking about refueling your body with carbohydrates and add that to copious amounts of exercise. You catch yourself at the right time, just after, you know, a 3-hour bike ride, your resolve is going to be very, very weak at that time. So again, food preparation, have something healthy that will refuel you properly, but also pay attention to the types of carbohydrates that you're eating, because a muffin is definitely not going to be as good for you. And she already knows this because the way she worded her answer. Have something readily available, like those baked oatmeal bars that I found online or something like that. I can put a link to that actually on our Cut the Fat podcast website, www.cutthefatpodcast.com. I can put the recipe for those baked oatmeal bars because that would be a great on-the-go breakfast for people. But I think the key here is preparation. And, you know, if you're somebody who's trying to get all those calories in and get all your carbohydrates in, it really is all about balance and making sure, I'm not sure exactly the word I'm trying to get out, but it's all about, what's the word I'm looking for, Ray?
Well, let me see.
Moderation.
That. Well, blah. No. I hate that word because we moderate ourselves to death. Let me just say this. There is nothing balanced about training for a triathlon. So the rules that we generally talk about when we're talking about weight loss typically do not apply to someone like Gina, at least not on the same level as it applies to people who are not triathletes. The process of training for a triathlon is extremely taxing to the body. Our Australia listeners, which we have a ton of them, might be interested to hear. There's a Dr. Paul Cribb, who is a weight loss and fitness expert in Australia. He has this concept called the metabolic window, okay? The metabolic window is about this time period just before you start working out and within, I'd say, a 3-hour period after the workout is finished, where your muscles and your tissues are so sensitive that it is not only okay to eat a refined carbohydrate at that time, it is actually beneficial to do so. And I hear the big breath underneath, but listen to the rest of it, okay? There is, you know, he's a bodybuilder, and he has worked with a lot of bodybuilders, so I understand where he's coming from, but he seems to be pretty well balanced in his, and I have not fully tested this theory yet, but I'm going to put it out there because this might apply to Gina.
Okay.
She's burning so much energy, the body's going to require refined carbohydrates in order to refuel her cells. She needs to get that glycogen level back up to normal because she's probably almost totally deplete by the time she finishes her workout. So the body is going to absorb any refined carbohydrates she takes in. I don't think it's such a bad thing that she were to have a muffin directly after such a long, you know, bike ride. I don't think it's such a bad thing. In fact, it probably is helpful for her to do it, provided she does a few other things. She has the muffin. She also has a good, clean protein source.
Okay.
She has some salad and some sort of healthy fat. If she does all those things, here's what I think the benefit will be. My concern isn't what she feels directly after her training. I think it's okay for her to have some refined carbohydrates and even a significant quantity of them directly after such a heavy workout. And the reason I think it's important is because if she doesn't, her body's going to make up the difference later. So she's going to end up with unresolved cravings for the next 24, 48 hours because of the fact that her cells are craving that glycogen, craving those carbohydrates.
I totally agree with that part. Done directly after the exercise is the most beneficial time to do that. I mean, you've got like an open window of time. But if you get into the habit of doing that, and don't forget, if she is gearing up for a triathlon, I believe that, I'm not saying 3 hours of riding bike is easy, but if that's a habit, if she's doing that 3 or 4 times a week, her body's going to adapt to that.
Oh, totally. You know, I noticed this with, I think you've said you've noticed this with aerobics instructors.
Mm-hmm.
Their bodies have a tendency to hold fat.
Yes.
And, you know, I know that speaking with Jade from the Metabolic Effect, he's noticed the same thing. A lot of aerobics instructors have difficulty losing weight because their body has a tendency to hold on to fat. I've noticed it in the salsa community because a lot of people know that I dance salsa. And when I can see a lot of people out there who struggle with weight and yet they dance 3, 4, 5 hours a night, sometimes 3 times a week.
Right.
And so there is a recuperative effect that happens. And what we're trying to do with this metabolic window, and I'm not quite done with the metabolic window explanation, but what we're doing with the metabolic window is we're trying to prevent the body from craving carbohydrates for 48 hours by giving it what it desires or needs directly after the activity.
Okay.
So directly after the workout, it's a good source of fast absorbing protein, like a whey protein with a refined carb source. Possible, and then maybe an hour after that, another protein and a slower absorbing carbohydrate. And then another hour after that, some more protein, a real meal, basically. You'd have a real meal directly after that. So what we're trying to do is give the body the nutrients that it needs so it doesn't crave for the next 48 hours, you see.
Okay.
So that's the metabolic window. It's this time period between directly before the workout, where it usually recommends a high protein shake, and then directly after the workout, where it's a high protein, refined carb source to really refuel the cells quickly. And then after that, high protein, lower energy carbohydrates for the next 3 hours. And then, you know, go on from there.
Okay. Okay. I'll go along with that one.
Okay.
I wasn't so sure at the very beginning. Yeah.
Do you still feel uncomfortable with it?
Not uncomfortable, but what I find is that, and I'm not trying to group her in with like the network of people here, but my friend who runs marathons has also got, you know, 3 or 4 other people who run marathons with her. All they talk about is carbohydrates. They eat like maybe 20 grams of protein a day. That's where I have the problem, is that they're so concerned about the carbohydrates and refueling themselves. That's all they eat is carbs. There's no protein happening in those meals at all. All the protein that they do get is almost accidental because it's 2 grams of protein in the spaghetti sauce that they use. Or, you know, if they eat a a handful of nuts, a handful of almonds. Well, gosh, they'll get 7 grams there. That's, I think, where I have the problems. They're so concerned about refueling with carbohydrates that they're not making sure each meal is balanced, which is where I was talking about the whole balance thing. But
that's a problem. That's a problem. And Stu Middleman, the author of the book The Slow Burn, and I might recommend that Gina get the book Slow Burn. It may help her with her training. Again, I'm not a fan of triathlons as far as doing them on a regular basis, or marathons for that matter. I think that they are not healthy activities because they are too stressful to the body. And I don't think that the body really enjoys that. And you see a lot of sick people who run marathons on a regular basis.
Yeah.
But Stu Middleman focuses on higher protein eating. And he's a super marathoner. So he does 100-mile races and such. Mm-hmm. And he eats mostly high protein, high fat foods rather than high carbohydrate foods.
But the fats too. That's a whole nother conversation.
No, oh, totally. We're just really focusing on the muffin issue, but there is a whole diet. Gina probably could use a whole diet overhaul because a lot of marathoners, a lot of triathletes really do focus too much on the carbs and not enough on the balance of the meal, right?
Right, and the fats are so important, and so is the protein. If you're going to be able to make it through a race, your muscles have got to be able to repair and rejuvenate so you are able to perform that race without getting sick.
Yes. All right, so that's good. Any final parting thoughts on this subject?
Well, I'm thinking about muffins.
Sorry about that, Blythe.
Yeah, it's Gina's fault. No, yeah, I'm teasing you. Muffins are always there.
There were a lot of other really great comments and such, guys. I'm sorry we couldn't get to everybody, but we're already an hour into this podcast. An hour and 5 minutes, actually, Blythe.
Oh,
so we'll have to do the next podcast here very soon. I think we covered a lot of good stuff. I think, number one, it's okay to put this stuff out there, guys. You don't have to believe that you are to blame. There are a lot of things that come into play here. And it's just you have responsibility, but your responsibility is to develop systems around the obstacles. Remember this, when you come up against the wall, it doesn't make sense to try to bust through that concrete wall. You devise ways around it or over it. You don't try to bust through it, at least not the majority of the times. That's the worst case scenario. So that's the last option, is busting through the wall. But it makes more sense to go around it or to go over it. Mm-hmm. So devise systems in your lifestyle to get around these problems. Really think them out and develop a system for yourself. That's the key when it comes to these barriers.
Exactly right. I wanted to thank everybody again for going on our Facebook page. And I know sometimes it's a mental exercise going on there and pinpointing. By us asking those questions, we're trying to help you pinpoint what could be hindering you from success in weight loss. And I appreciate people going out there on a limb and being, the first person to answer, or the first person to say, hey, I'm not sure if I'm doing this right, or putting your spouse out there. We're not here to critique or judge anybody, but we are here to help and support. So I do appreciate everybody that goes on there and puts something, because I know it's kind of going out. It's kind of putting your life out there.
It is. It is. And especially with questions like this that really push the limits, because nobody wants to put blame out there on anybody else. And that wasn't the intention of this exercise. The intention was to get to some of the real stuff.
Yeah. Help you guys search.
That's happening underneath the surface, right?
Yeah. Yep. And I love those questions, Ray.
Great.
You always come up with good ones.
Thanks, Blythe.
Yeah.
So if you want to get more or be part of our community on Facebook, just go to Facebook, search Cut the Fat Podcast, all one word, and be sure to like the page, and you'll get updates whenever we post comments and tips and announcements of the next podcasts and so forth. And check us out at cutthefatpodcast.com. Be sure to download our free ultimate fat loss tool off of there.
Mm-hmm. And also, don't forget to rate us on iTunes. We love to go on there and read the great ratings that we get from you guys.
Yeah, don't just rate, but if you can leave comments, that's even better. Unless they're negative comments. If you have negative comments, just email them to us. We prefer those in that fashion.
We get those too.
Yeah. We do. We do.
We've been getting some great emails, and I've been replying to, I believe I'm all caught up. I believe I've replied to every single one of them. So if you guys do have questions or comments that you would like us to email you, you know, go ahead and send them.
Or post them on Facebook. We try to get on there more often and help people with those questions as well. Thank you guys very much.
Podcast 38, under the belt.
In the books. In the books. And, of course, as usual, we'll leave you with the Grilled Lincolns. The song is Something New. Check them out at www.grilledlincolns.com. And they too have a Facebook page to search for the Grilled Lincolns. You can like them as well. All right, you guys. It's been a pleasure. We'll see you next time here on Cut the Fat Podcast.
Bye, guys.
All right. See you guys.
Say you wanna try something new, a little twist of what you know is true. You're in a cloudy hole, shit don't touch you, and you feel a bliss of pop the pus is blue. And all the sticky things that keep me silent are the same things that make your sick world.